have police photographing our license plates.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and my guest today is the star of the new feature-length film, Water and Power. Great title, great significance. His name is Nicholas Gonzalez. And Nicholas, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, listen, it's grand. It's a great pleasure. I love your work, as they say. Do you prefer Nick or Nicholas?
Either one is fine. My mother named me Nicholas, but I'll answer to both.
Well, I'll respect your mother. Nicholas, it is. So, tell me, Water and Power. First of all, you play the lead role. I don't know how much we want to give away, but is it okay to say you're one of two brothers? And and explain maybe the title of the film?
Yes, Water and Power, while also being the utility branch in Los Angeles is also the nickname for these two brothers given by their father, who was a ditch digger for Mulholland in the early days of Water and Power, and sees a bigger future for his sons. And he instills in them from a very young age that you can't have water without power, and you can't have power without water, that
yes.
These brothers need each other to succeed.
Yes. You know, the title caught my attention because I thought immediately, I'll bet that's what that means. This is not just a utility film or a documentary on our utilities. Because for those who may not have heard, Nestle Tea some time ago were trying to privatize water just because he who controls the water controls the power. Okay, with
exactly.
That... with
Chinatown.
Yes, exactly. Listen, there's some great lines from the film that I particularly like there's nothing concrete in L.A. except the river. You got to love that.
There are so many incredible lines. I mean, the poetry of Richard Montoya, if you read the play,
yes.
You, I mean, do yourself a favor and read that after you see the film, because it is so just overflowing with poetry and so many slick phrases.
Yes.
That I find myself to this day, I mean, I've done the film, and I still love to quote them. And some of my favorite ones come out of one of my favorite actors in the film is Clancy Brown.
Yes.
Who has some of the best lines. He's so good.
I've never seen him better, I'll tell you. He is fabulous in this.
He just handles the poetry and the language, the theatricality of it so well. He is just an absolute beast of acting.
Yes. You know, we should state credit to writer-director Richard Montoya, who wrote the film, developed it in Sundance Institute. We know him from theater and television, and as Nicholas was just telling us, the film is based on the play that Richard Montoya wrote.
Mark Taper Forum.
That's right, that's right.
Hit play.
Yes, yes, for his Culture Clash. Meanwhile,
I grew up on Culture Clash too, and the TV show as well, and to work with Mr. Montoya was also a bit of a vote of confidence, you know, even just being an actor in the Latino community and knowing that he would choose me to represent his work, which is so much commentary. I mean, on not only the community but politics in general. It's so rife with meaning and satire and you name it, and to be the person that to handle that was really a vote of confidence, like I said.
Well, from the trailer that I've seen, you certainly you earned it. So congratulations! But I understand what you're saying, and for that matter, no one less than Academy Award nominated Edward James Olmos is the presenting producer of Water and Power. Yes.
Yes, we're just really fortunate that Eddie, who's also a dear friend of mine, we've worked together on several occasions. Who's always been a fan of Richard's work, but yet saw the film and just jumped on championing the cause because he just believed in it so much. And to hear his reviews of the film and his reactions, it's really been moving.
Yes.
To have someone like that get behind the film in such a big way. I mean, he is a community organizer at its basis all the way to incredible, you know, actor and performer, and he has just gotten behind this film, and to watch him get up in front of crowds and tout it is absolutely moving.
Yes. And, you know, the timing of its release with everything that's going on, the film is, here it is, in case you didn't catch it on the news. And yet, at the same time, there's so much under the surface of what's going on out there within a number of American cities, but we don't see the kind of grit, not on the news anyway, we don't see what we see in Water and Power. This family, father trying to pass on a tradition that allows his two sons to go beyond. What are your thoughts about that?
I guess one of the biggest themes too is, you know, it's a cautionary tale of what happens when we, you know, whether it's looking at Latinos, if we strive to reach too high, you know, it's very much the legend of Daedalus, you know, and trying to soar too high. And what's in store for us, and it's not only ourselves pulling each other down, but the powers that be, and we find that the power really only lies in a few hands, even in a big city like Los Angeles.
Yeah.
There's a whole undercurrent, a very raw power wielding that, like you said, Richard uncovers, and it's only the beginning. You know, there's a lot that we just don't see about the real underbelly of whether it's politics or society.
Yes. You know, people talk about film noir. Those of us who do film and television know what that means. But let's give a sort of reference point, even though I loved, for instance, L.A. Confidential. But I have to say, Water and Power, there's a lot more noir in the film noir of that than there was even in the great film L.A. Confidential, with a Chicano twist. Yes.
That's what Richard does too. Yeah.
So it, how is it? Is that, are you more or less based in L.A. or in California?
I've been in Los Angeles close to 20 years.
Yes.
And California for longer than that. I'm a graduate of Stanford University, so I very quickly made California my home. I just turned 39. So I've been in California longer than I've been in Texas. I'm originally a Texas boy, but I have really taken to this, you know, the state out here. It's a great life.
It is.
And, there's a lot of good work.
And some good work being done in this film. Tell me, are you a fan of some of the old black and white movies like Pat O'Brien, Jimmy Cagney? They grow up as friends. One becomes a priest. One becomes a gangster. But Water and Power has taken that to, I think, a new, I don't want to just say gritty level, but a realism that...
Exactly, putting it a little on its head, and what does that really mean? I mean, we can look in the life of the film, the reality that exists in those, and you have these kind of grandiose, where the gangster and then the DA, but I mean, this is very much a reality. There's a homegrown, decorated cop.
Yes.
Who wants and is set out to be a good guy, or one of those guys that, you know, the spit-shine shoes and the straight back and a moral integrity like his father taught him.
Mm-hmm.
And the other brother who's this standing, you know, California senator who wants the best for his community and is pushing to live up to his father's ideals. And yet, in that struggle, what has to happen, you know, what has to be sacrificed in order for these things to be achieved? And that's the sad, that's the tragedy with these two, that for one to be successful, the other has to negotiate those morality.
Yes.
You know, and it's that's perhaps one of the most heartbreaking things about it. You know, they both could have been so much more.
You know, I always feel and have said, as I do my political writing, that it is such a waste when our society turns its back on or has repressed or oppressed different cultures, because there's so much there to be offered, and we lose it because we limit it. And then when, and as in this film, as you say, in Water and Power, these two brothers are not on opposite sides of the law. They are both trying to make a difference for all Americans, and still they run into that wall.
And what's so interesting too is what you say is the community that we're talking about is the one that is the backbone of the state, you know,
yes,
the backbone of this country.
Yes.
So it's not just merely of, oh, we should be more open to, you know, these, we're here first.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
That's the interesting part is fighting for legitimacy in a town that you created, that bears your name, every street and every building in that, and the words that have infiltrated, you know, English language. It's really a funny thing that we have to stop and kind of say this is a culture or community that needs to be given attention, or when it was shoved out or attempted to be shut out a long time ago.
Yes.
You know.
It's a repeated history. It really is. You know, starting with Native Americans. It's just let's get back to the film. But you know, I want to talk about the geography, because as you're pointing out, this is a city that comes from a history that you're very familiar with. For us New Yorkers, explain to us the difference between, say, Hollywood, downtown Los Angeles, and the East Side.
Yeah, well, I mean, the East Side is actually where I live, Echo Park. But, you know, it's like Boyle Heights. L.A. is also one of these kind of places, very much like New York. You walk a couple blocks and you're in another neighborhood.
Yes.
We're very much the same. But the East Side, the borders, we're kind of almost surround downtown, are your cities like Boyle Heights and Echo Park, Silver Lake, which has now become like, you know, a hipster enclave. But gentrification is very much a problem for us as it is in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I say problem, you know, pushing out a lot of Native communities.
Yes.
But it's rife with culture. It really is what makes L.A. what it is. It all permeates from this area, you know, surrounding Dodger Stadium and the Native American history, the homes, at one point Richard talked about during the film, that the menorahs in the doorways of these Latino houses, because
yes,
the Jews that used to live there before, once they moved out, Latinos left them in the doorway almost as like a good luck charm, if you will.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And they then became watched over these Latino families. You know, so there's such a mixture culture that is so rich and goes deeper than a lot of people even living there realize.
Yes.
And it's all steeped in the East Side.
Wow. Yeah. It's
really rich.
It is. And I appreciate what you say about the similarities to New York, because I lived there for so many years, and it's true. You walk a couple of blocks and you're in an entirely different heredity, you know, heritage. And yet all the cultures are there. And for the most part, there's a good deal of community and harmony. But I think the clash is... Go ahead.
I was going to say, what's also really amazing about what Richard's done is he's almost kind of done this living map of Los Angeles, because we go throughout, not only, I mean, everything emanates from the East Side, especially the two twins, Water and Power.
Yes.
But we get kind of how it permeates into the different areas, whether it's Malibu, whether it's Topanga, whether it's, you know, the outlying suburbs in the valleys, in the San Gabriel Valley, and how these tentacles of this community kind of like reach out and touch all these different areas, and how they're united and how they work together. It's almost like this symbiotic relationship that only power really truly understands.
Mm-hmm.
Water, being a senator, should understand these things a little bit better, but it was what their father taught to power,
you know,
workings of the city, the turbines under the city, how it all connects and works. And he's kind of made this moving, you know, almost a map of the topography of Los Angeles. And it really goes, instead of seeing an elevation, we really dig underneath and get into the dirt of it and see how it really goes underneath.
Yes. Yes, and the subtle mapping is in the human lives, the characters too, as well as you know what their relationships and their challenges are a reflection of what their father did for a living. It's poetry, like you said. For those who might have tuned in a little late, we should be clear. Water and Power, I know that Nicholas did say this earlier, Water and Power are nicknames for the two characters. Water is played by Enrique Murciano, did I get it right?
Yes.
And Power is played by Nicholas Gonzalez, who we're talking to today. But they're nicknames given to them by their father because, and father, by the way, is played by Jacob Vargas, another great performer. He gives you these names because he feels from his work they exemplify Water and Power, the power of the city, the infamous, if you will, LADWP. But it becomes a legacy. It becomes something that you strive to live for, to live up to. Yes.
Yes, definitely.
So we're going to.
It's worth mentioning another huge character in this film is Emilio Rivera from, you know, Sons of Anarchy.
Yes, yes.
You name whatever movie and film, he's a favorite all across the nation. And such a, he's kind of that connection to the street that Power has forged.
Yes.
And his kind of right-hand man, the one that's sitting shot in his car, as he refers to, and it's almost replaced where Water used to be because there's things that Water can't know that have to happen to keep Water in power.
Uh-huh.
In power.
Yes.
By power, you know?
Yes.
But another just incredible performer who was actually in the original play.
Ah, uh-huh.
Played a different character, though.
Yeah. Actually, maybe we should take a break now, but when we come back, I would like to talk about the film was shot in 12 nights in Los Angeles. Is that true?
12 furious nights.
Yes, it would have to be. Yes, in 12 nights. Wow. But we do want to talk a little more, since you said you grew up on Culture Clash and Mark Tapper Forum, chat a bit about that, but also about the actual making of the film. 12 extraordinary nights in Los Angeles. Stay with us. We're talking to the star of Water and Power, Nicholas Gonzalez. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. In My Son the Fanatic, Parvez is a good man, a Pakistani immigrant who has brought his family to the Midlands of England. Subtle racism pervades his world, but he chooses to move on in good cheer despite his wounds. Parvez is ecstatic when his son becomes engaged to the police chief's daughter, but during a family visit to celebrate the pending union, his future in-laws' displeasure is clear. Another wound for Parvez and a turning point for his unhappy son. Parvez drives a cab, taking fares at night for the extra income. He meets other seekers who are not necessarily seeking betterment. Among them is a prostitute, a victim of her own circumstances. They are both at heart kind souls who share a wise understanding of the limitations of a harsh world. They become more than friends, two outcasts absorbing reality's blows. With his son turning to the fanaticism of the old country and his wife no longer trying to assimilate, Parvez seeks solace with his beloved jazz records and the occasional scotch. This is a subtle and complex story indeed. But thanks to the talents of those involved, one is not left with a sense of hopelessness. This film is blessed with a perfect and hopeful ending. My Son the Fanatic. Out in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and I'm still with the star of Water and Power, Nicholas Gonzalez. And the two brothers in the film are nicknamed Water and Power. Nicholas plays Power, and the title is
full of meaning, multi-leveled expression of where we are in society, not only in America, yes, but in neighborhoods. We tend to think we say America or we say our city, but it's all these levels. And Los Angeles, as we were saying earlier, New York, it has so many different cultures and heritages in such a small area. But enough of me. Back to Nicholas. Nicholas, you said in our last segment that you grew up on Culture Clash. Can you elaborate on that a bit? Tell us about it.
The TV show. They're kind of fighting satire. It just gave a very different angle than the things we were seeing.
Yes.
Be prior to that, and then I was able to catch a lot of their plays in L.A. I never got to see Water and Power on stage, which I really wish. Although I've read it, but just what they've done as a group together, and then later Richard's work has just kind of always been. I think we've always seen a lot of fighting satire and shows like. In Living Color, right? In the African-American audience.
But yes.
There was never really something that spoke to, my experience, and then also an experience that was foreign to me. I grew up in Texas, and, the Chicano movement and even the word Chicano was something that was very foreign to me until I came out to go to school at Stanford.
Yes.
But it was Culture Clash that really first introduced that, and that kind of political angle and the way they looked at things, and it was very irreverent.
Yes.
And biting. And something that, is always something I wish I'd seen more of, And I think that now, I had said in our segment before, is then to be working alongside them was just a huge vote of confidence. I haven't stopped learning from them.
I understand.
Especially Richard.
Yes. Well, Richard Montoya is certainly a legend in theater, television, and now I believe with this film as well. It is a great experience. I've worked with Spielberg, so I know when you go in, you get over with the really greats like these guys. You get over standing in awe because they don't give you time for that. You could be awed momentarily, but then they're down to work. Yes, and you.
He's a journeyman poet.
Yes,
Richard is, and he has a short amount of time in anything he's doing. He writes furiously, he films furiously, and he's constantly traveling, putting up plays. I'm in Denver right now, which is another place, the American Night.
Yes.
He was showing recently here, but he pops into a city with people into shape and gets the show going and moves on to the next
and
one.
Moves on, exactly. And you have to keep up, and it's a wonderful challenge. It's exhilarating, even just as I talk about and think about it with you. The challenge is people arrive, and since you've been cast by these giants, they expect that they knew what they were doing when they cast you, and you keep up because they set the tempo, and we're off and running. And then the work, the product, the finished product is just so impressive. Okay.
Whenever I try to tell somebody about, how quick we were shooting, I'm always wrong because I continually say less pages than we did. I want to say we did 9 a night, but that's not true. We at times did 20 pages a night. I mean,
oh my God.
That kind of shoot where, and you're not talking about easy language by
no,
any means.
No,
this wasn't all adapted for the screen. I mean, this is a very different film. This is very much an art piece. The language is still very much touched in theater, and we committed to that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we're gonna keep that theatricality, and we would do these long 15-minute, maybe more, takes. Again, like I said, I'm whenever I try to recount it, it's always less than what it really was, because the idea that we did what we did is just it's unbelievable. Honestly. I've never worked that fast in my life.
And it's and for those listening who aren't in the movie business, when you talk about that many pages in a night, you're not just talking about as in theater, which even be a good night's rehearsal in theater for that matter, but you're talking about setups, moving camera, equipment, light, sound, all
locations.
The yeah, locations. Oh yes, can't forget that.
Don't, you know, I mean, and you're talking about in a mainstream film.
Yes.
Maybe 3 pages a day.
Yes. Yes.
You know.
Well, tell us, give us some specific stories from behind the scene of trying to accomplishing what you have accomplished in 12 nights in Los Angeles. How did you guys do
gosh.
It?
Gosh, I mean, you know, it was as much a tour of the East Side as, you know, even someone like I said, I lived there, but I saw places I never knew existed, and that's much of what he shows in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the first day, we started off holed up in this really run-down little motel with just me, Enrique Murciano, and Emilio Rivera.
Yes.
Just thrown together in this room with this poetry and this drug-addled fever pushing it all, you know? And,
uh-huh.
And not knowing, really, you know, we had done some rehearsal. More of it consisted of really hanging out with Enrique and us really just kind of getting a sense of each other.
Sure.
But then thrown in and not really knowing how the other was really going to play anything.
Uh-huh.
And, you
yes.
know, we all prepared in our own ways. You know, we had a fake wall built in on one part, and Richard and the other producers and Vito Village behind this wall, that they'd close it off for, like I said, 20 minutes, and then we would run through this take of, you know, 12 pages of dialogue or
wow.
something, and stopping in a very different place than you started. And between that, you know, my character is snorting coke and smoking weed laced with X and, you know, drinking heavily, like all of this stuff, all in the span of this bit of time, while at the same time having these huge life or death conversations.
Sure.
And it's all poetic.
Yes.
You know, it was just such a crazy experience, and I'm like struggling to come up with like one story even, because it's just, I look at it and it's all a blur.
Yes.
You know, a beautiful, you know, amazingly fun blur. But you know, we just had no time.
Uh-huh.
And our DP Claudia Chea,
yes,
was holding the camera.
Yes.
Was right in there grabbing everything and anything we like we may have wanted. We backtracked, set
mm-hmm.
everything back up as much as we could, dried
exactly.
off, and started back at the top.
Yes.
Trying to get it from different angles, you know, it was really unbelievable.
Well, it's, you know, as I believe quite strongly, movies are made in post. And so you shoot everything you can, get everything you can, and then you make the movie in post. Do you think that's what happened here with Richard?
Oh, very much, yeah. Very much. I mean, things changed, order changed with up, and that's, you know, tough as much for actors as it is for, you know,
yes.
Richard, who has a very specific idea on what he wanted, and there were things he had to give up and things he had to see that didn't work, you know, and you had
sure.
to constantly kill your babies, and you made beautiful babies. but he, you know, it really kind of came together, and it told a little bit of a different story that way, you know. I mean, he's got so much to say already, and then to be limited on time and budget like he was,
yes,
it's really incredible. And this is only his first one, you know.
Wow.
It's really powerful, but you definitely know you're looking at something different watching it, that's for sure.
It's true. It's and it can't be described as a slice of life, and yet it is a life, a lifestyle, a journey that we're not used to seeing. And
he calls it Chicano Noir, and
yes.
very much you also have to give up, and that, you know, we also in movies were used to suspending your belief.
Well, yes.
This is more of suspending what you're used to with
yes.
film, and because you're really putting yourself in, everything just means so much.
Yes.
I'm still learning, like, oh, that's what that line that means. You know, oh, these are the sixth, the tenth meaning of this one line, because that's how you write.
Mm-hmm.
Everything means so much more than what you first see. So, I mean, I'm learning so much even, you know, years later after shooting the film
mm-hmm.
about what's going on, you know. So it's so rich.
Tell me the line I mentioned earlier. Give me your take on it. There's nothing concrete in L.A. except
nothing is concrete in L.A.
except the river. Wow.
Well, literally.
Yes.
We have this tiny little that most of the time is just a trickle of water.
Yes.
That's probably about a foot wide, that's surrounded and on top of cement and diverted all through the city by these different, you know, the ditches and stuff, which our father in the movie.
Yes.
Big. And yet at the same time, it's whether they're promises made, whether political or personal, nothing is ever concrete. Everything is changeable. Everything's subject to change. And whether that's for people's own personal pursuit or to satisfy a community, everything is nebulous. And it's ever-changing, which is a big backbone of what's going on in this film. You know, don't tell me something's done and decided because I have a way around that.
Exactly, exactly. So how, and this is the point which I've been trying to avoid, how, we won't say where they are, but how, what is it that gets the two brothers sort of together dealing with a specific tragedy? I don't know how to ask that question without giving away too much, but I'll leave it to you to decide how much to tell us.
I kind of don't know how to answer without giving away too much. You know, there's a hit put out.
Yes.
And power has to act quickly.
Uh-huh.
And in doing so, he kind of, as they say, he messes with the chain of command and sets off a time bomb that then gets everybody in the city involved, and he's now being pursued by everything from Latino gangs to the Asian gangs to the gangs that wear suits and ties and badges.
Yes.
That we know as the police officers.
Yes.
He's now being chased by everybody, and one person that may be able to save them, and the last person he wants to go to is his own brother.
Well, it's just extremely powerful, and I guess moving, disturbing, but exciting, because there's just not enough that's fresh and new in cinema. You know, too often we've got a formula and we're stuck on it, and of course if something works, you make a sequel that works less. And but this makes us look at it, and it makes us not only look at the film but look in the mirror, I think. What do you think?
Definitely. I mean, if anything, I think holds up that mirror to ourselves and where we fall and the when the battle lines are drawn, you know, and to realize that those lines, as we say, they're not concrete.
Yes.
It really just makes you think, which I think all great cinema should.
Now, the film, again, Water and Power, was developed at Sundance, the Sundance Institute. Were you involved in that directly, or was that something for Richard?
I wasn't. Actually, it had been done a few years prior, and that was Ethan Rouse.
Sure.
Emilio Rivera, who plays Norte Sur, and one of my favorites, Jesse Borrego, was playing Water, and he said Power, you know, helped to really develop the script and the concept of how it should play on screen.
Yes. You know, as a director, I've often said to actors that I cast you, so I obviously you're who I want. And the beauty, I think, of one of the blessings, if you will, of the director is that you have this in your head already. You know what it is you want to see, and now you need to impart it on the actors. But the second thing is that the moment the actors start speaking, they're not necessarily the same voices in your head. And then when they're moving, and then as they react, you know. Exactly.
That's when it becomes this collaborative thing.
Exactly. It becomes a whole new thing, much fuller than, you know, the blank page you started with and your imagination. And that's why I think that, and of course this happens in theater as well, but I think when you do film and television, there are just so many, because of all the different angles, if nothing else, and locations, it's just so much that develops while you're doing it, as long as everyone's open to that. Yes?
And that's one of the biggest things I've learned in my career, is that I think I've always been someone who's tried to control everything.
Uh-huh.
And tried to be, you know, keep it all close to me and everything I see in my head, and now being open to the process and realizing that when you are open, there's something else that's created outside of all of us involved, and we all kind of contribute when you see the greater cause.
Exactly. And like you were describing with the group of actors and you being put in a room, okay, here we are. We've had a little time together, but now we are these characters together for the first time. Did you do any improv, or were you just, boom, here's the camera, and you know the lines?
Well, you know, we knew our lines, but there was definitely a lot of improv moments. And as I say, when you have lines that mean 20 different things,
yes.
So it's just a matter of which one you grab onto in that moment.
Yes. It's been great talking to you, Nicholas. I hate to end it, but before we go...
No, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, believe me. But before we stop, let's talk a bit about the release. When can we see it? Where can we see it? It's coming out, iTunes, etc.
Water and Power, iTunes, January 20th, it'll be released. And for any other information about any screenings, we're doing a lot of hug screenings around the nation, which is, and that's T-U-G-G, and that's essentially if you... decide you want to see the film and you want to get a bunch of people together, you can set up a page, almost like a crowdfunding kind of thing, where people sign up to watch the film and, mm-hmm. and your local theater will screen it. And also you can go to Water and Power Film on Facebook, and there's all the up-to-date information on everything we're doing.
Excellent. And remember to like them on Facebook. This is an incredible movie experience. It comes from the genius of Richard Montoya and the cast and production crew he's put together. We've been talking to Power. How about that? Nicholas Gonzalez. And Nicholas, what's next for you? This is all so grand and moving so fast. What do you think? What do you plan?
Gosh, everything's been really great. In the vein of what we've been talking about with political satire and whatnot.
Yes.
I have an animated series with Seth MacFarlane coming out in the fall called Border Town. It's on Fox.
Uh-huh.
I do three of the main voices on that.
Fantastic.
Animated series. I have a big video game coming out in March called Battlefield Hardline. It's the fifth in the series of Battlefield games that'll be out on Xbox. PlayStation in March.
Yes.
Hardline. I played Elite in Mendoza. And I'm actually on my way to Vancouver to start shooting The Flash. Playing a character named Dante Ramon. I'm the brother of one of the leads, Cisco Ramon. And it's a great show on
yes.
CW, and I'm really excited.
All right. That's excellent. Well, we wish you all the best, Nicholas. You've earned it. It's wonderful, tremendous work. And so, well, we must say goodbye, but we wish you all the best. And... maybe we'll talk again soon sometime, okay?
Thank you so much. I look forward to it.
My pleasure.
And thank you to all your listeners.
Thank you, Nicholas. Nicholas Gonzalez, the star of Richard Montagna's Water and Power. See it. You'll want to. Believe me, you'll thank me for sending you. Thank you so much, Nicholas. You got it. Bye now.
Bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Peter Hedges is a talented writer who finds great comedy and meaning in the foibles of life. His fine films include What's Eating Gilbert Grape, About a Boy, and especially Pieces of April, which marked his directing debut. It was a rich and entertaining indie made on a ridiculously limited budget. Played by the pre-cruised Katie Holmes... April was once the family's favorite child, but she took the rebel path and strayed. Now feeling the need to reconnect before her mother's illness takes its toll, she and her boyfriend invite her dysfunctional family to her new apartment for Thanksgiving dinner. Mom and Dad are played with a perfect combination of poignancy and humor by Patricia Clarkson and Oliver Platt. There are really two stories flowing here. The family's journey to New York for the reunion dinner with their estranged daughter, and April's hilarious attempts to accomplish the Thanksgiving dream. No one has much faith in April's ability to pull it off, but she is determined, and this day may be the last opportunity for them all to forgive and forget. Pieces of April is a charmingly poignant comedy. Search for it, and you'll find its truths to be nutty, universal, and ultimately optimistic. Indie Film Minute, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. I'm not Charlie, but Vive la France, Ferguson, and Selma. World history is evidence that violent, radicalized religion has, in the name of God, repeatedly entrapped humanity on a planet of militarized borders, potentially cast now with a host of vigilante characters, this time with an inside job, a crusader's reversal, if you will, using biting satiric cartoons as an excuse for eye-for-an-eye cyclical soft-target murder. Discarding vengeance is mine, says the Lord, in favor of they send one of yours to the hospital, you send two of theirs to the morgue, and Gandhi's admonition is self-realized. A world of toothless, blind zealots abolishing love thy neighbor as thyself. I am a creative artist who sometimes pens political satire for in-your-face wake-up call directed at those who refuse to see the error of our ways is in the heroes we choose to worship. Whether for profit, notoriety, or the pleasure of making a salient point, there is little justification for repeatedly poking fun at someone's looks, accent, weight, heredity, height, color of skin, passionate irreverence, or zealous religious beliefs. But something has changed. Viva la interfaith respect for freedom of speech. Like most rational thinking people, I acknowledge it's not just what we say, but how we say it. So on my more reasonable days, I am not Charlie, but every day I proclaim, Vive la Parisians, adding their verse, Je suis Charlie, to a finally growing international chorus in harmony chanting, Enough is enough. Nonetheless, we do not excuse murder when wondering why one chooses to be our antagonist, though some opine by splattering mourners of Charlie Hebdo with opportunistic, creatively laced with bias, and dipped in prejudice flavoring for revenge. No, Sanghoi, it is neither defeat nor praise to wonder why before unleashing police state among the masses. Questioning violent motivation speaks less praise for our attackers than direct our united human response. To those using open carry on any soil, soiling any peaceful multinationality city with innocent blood, remember, for centuries the pen has proven mightier than beheadings, gun violence, or Guantanamo torture. Viva la Unity rally in Paris and anonymous nonviolent hacking. Cowardly murderers are history's infamous footnotes. From 1777 Cornstalk murder to the gunning down of Parisians in 2015, know this. While our red-eyed monster is the love of money, its wings are the insatiable, needy indulgence for power over others. First, steal the land, then enslave to develop. Next, rape resources to drench oneself in black gold. Finally, privatizing for tea, stealing from Detroit slave descendants, and corrupting with coal ash, take power's most powerful partner, water. Can't imagine our world without safe flowing air and water, decent housing, structurally sound schools, debt-free education, reliable infrastructure, including adequately funded and updated energy grid. Then look outside your window. Now, keeping our friends close, but our enemies closer. Remember Israel's attack on the U.S. liberty. Keep a watchful eye on Bilderberg meetings. Never forget the Spanish Inquisition. And be mindful of any domestic or foreign political coalition trying to take us backwards. For it is only in degrees of violence that we stand separately from the small Muslim core that is using us to destroy the truth and wisdom of both the Quran and the Bible. Religion and governments are only the problem when fanatics, extremists, and mass chicken littles torture, destroy, and murder in the name of a god they defame. It takes billions of dollars to make war a perpetual profit, but only millions to save and build lives. Gender equality and justice for all are as much the innocent targets as diverse beliefs, fashion statements, and the freedom of creative artists. No, I am not Charlie, but I stand with all who demand the right to be. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of thereasonablevoice.com website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.